Our guest speaker today is Janelle, and she's one of my friends. I'm so honored to call her a friend. Janelle is a mother of four kids, ages 9 to 4. Though math is not her strong suit, this means she has four kids. She had four kids in 5 years and is still standing upright and able to complete full sentences when her children are not interrupting her. Janelle and her husband, John, returned a year ago from five and a half years in Uganda, East Africa, with Engineering Ministries International, which they still work with from headquarters here in Colorado. She likes dark chocolate, well-written fiction, anything creative, music, and her husband, but not in that order. She is now a freelance writer for a handful of ministries and has a book proposal waiting at a publisher's right now, which sometimes makes her feel like she is running naked in an ice storm. Janelle blogs at agenerousgrace.com. If you don't follow that blog, I suggest you do. Agenerousgrace.com. It's a good one. Where she is faithful to disclose embarrassing realities about her life as she discloses practical ideas on relationships and spirituality. Please welcome Janelle to the stage.
This is your clicker. Howdy. You guys are having a whole lot of fun. And if I would have known there was a MOPS when I had four kids, five and under, definitely would have done this, so kudos to all of you. Okay, so this is my brood now, and it's not 9 to 4, it's 9 to 14. they've grown a little bit. My son is almost as tall as I am, and he used to fit in here. So now his feet won't even fit in here, and they smell like a lot worse. So anyway, that's me. Anyway, okay, today I want to talk to you. They've asked me to talk on the topic of friendship, and I was pretty excited about that. I wanted to start off by telling you about a date night that my husband and I had a couple weeks ago, because yes, you can go on date nights when your kids are old enough to watch your other kids. Hang in there. Someday. but it was still pretty spontaneous, to the tune of, like, I think my kids may have had, like, mac and cheese or something. But I hopped in the car. I was doing the whole fun bun thing. You know, I was just like, I'm getting out. That's the point. But I had my makeup on my lap, and while we were driving, I was putting on makeup, which I know is a little bit ironic, but my husband looks over me at a stoplight. He goes, you know you don't need to put on makeup, right? And I'm like, oh, if not for a date night, what is makeup for? And he's like, well, makeup is kind of like a tux. He's like, it's fun to wear sometimes, but he just said, I like your face. I know, that's what I said. I zipped at the back. Obviously not, didn't take it too much to heart because I'm wearing makeup today, but, but we were talking about makeup, and I was thinking back to a conversation I had with my sister, and I had three sisters, so having boys now is a little bit of a learning curve, but she was telling me that there's a new product that can make your eyelashes grow. I don't know if it's like 3 millimeters or something like that, and the idea is when you're not wearing makeup, your lashes actually look longer. It only costs $150 a bottle. But she was like, so here's the bummer. The more that we do more fake stuff, she said, the people who have natural beauty, they really can't compete. You know what I mean? Like, the more that we all start faking, you know, fake chests, fake, you know, bodies that we have to go to the gym 5 times a week to maintain, you know, right now, apparently, I am not supposed to have gray hair when I get older. I'm not supposed to have a tummy after I have a baby. You know, all that kind of stuff. It gives the idea that the rest of us can't really be ourselves, right? Today, I want to talk a little bit about relationships that have a little less mascara. Okay? Relationships that have a little bit less makeup and a little bit more real. So, I realize that this is kind of a weird topic. I'm just going to do a show of hands here. Has anybody found relationships with women to be a little scary or a little mean? Me too. If you did not raise your hand, you're among the blessed among us. but everybody has found probably some tough times with women. I know when I first found out I was having a girl, I was the thing that actually made me scared was girl drama. When I was around a high school freshman, I had a mean girl's experience that kind of kicked off what eventually came very close to an eating disorder. So you need to know this topic on vulnerability is coming from a person who cared more about people approving of her than she cared about eating food, okay? I understand how scary it can be to be around women, okay? Because we can be a little bit of a militant bunch. I guess, has anybody ever heard of mom shaming? It's real. It's totally a thing. Has anybody ever been a victim of mom shaming? Kind of, just a little? I mean, there's some significant pressure that we give and receive as moms, right? It's kind of like motherhood isn't a pressure cooker enough, right? We need to add a few more standards, right? Because really the only way that you're really hitting a home run as a mom is if you're baking your own bread from sprouted grains with essential oils diffusing and homeschooling your children, right? So, yeah, you laugh, it's a thing, I'm telling you. So I understand how we can sometimes feel subpar just when we're around other women. Don't get me wrong, real relationships tell the truth. Okay, let's have the kind of relationships where if somebody has broccoli in their teeth, we tell them. And I'm talking about real broccoli and metaphorical broccoli. Okay, but if it's not loving to the other person, I guess I would say, is it really fully truthful? Because I think they're kind of the same thing. Having control and having law and standards has always been easier to manage than people than having diversity and accepting each other, whether we meet expectations or not. We need to become a safe place for each other. Not where we don't have opinions, but where loving people is where we start. They don't have to prove themselves to feel fully accepted. Would you guys agree with that? That wasn't very enthusiastic. Would you agree with that? Okay. So I want you to turn to your neighbor, and I want you to say, sometimes I have a really horrid attitude toward my child. Go ahead. Okay? See? I know you did. Okay. Now turn to another person at your table and tell them, you don't have a perfect marriage, and I don't either. Okay? Now turn to your table and say, I think I can like you anyway. Okay. Because here's the deal. We are more isolated than ever. Okay? We're more isolated than ever. We, for centuries, women have been harvesting alongside each other or planting alongside each other. They've been milling grain together, and they've been doing life together. Now we drive by each other with closed windows and we shut the garage behind us, right? And we consider friendship like a 140-character status update and that's it, right? And we end up, I mean, someone pointed out to me that for the first time, the last 100 years are the first time ever that people have expected their romantic relationships to carry the majority of their emotional needs, right? And here's the deal. I don't know what your husband is like. My husband's an introvert. Oops. Sorry, honey. You don't have room for 25,000 more words? Sorry. I'm just saying, I think sometimes we place a little bit of unfair expectations on our marriages because we're not helping each other out. Does that make sense? I found that a reality in my life. I think we expect our marriages to carry some freight that maybe they weren't intended to carry. So I know what it's like to be afraid you'll be judged. Keep in mind that everyone else's voices are only helpful as far as they help you to love God and your family better. So if you're like me and you love for everybody else to tell you what to do, keep those voices in the right place. Okay, the idea isn't to add fabric softeners to all your opinions so that everybody feels accepted. But we just want to care more about the person in front of us than we care about what we think they should do. Does that make sense? So, all right. All right. So when my husband and I were getting married, we were very young, okay? And he had this idea. He wanted to have etched on the inside of our wedding rings. There's a verse in the Bible that says, and the man and wife became one flesh, and they were naked and not ashamed. And me, good little church girl, I was like, oh, naked on the inside of my wedding ring? No! So that I nixed that, okay? But I think he understood something about relationships that I hadn't picked up on yet. Because I think marriage, if we talk about community, it's kind of in concentric circles, okay? So the smallest circle here is marriage, okay? And then as we get out, maybe we have our immediate family. Then maybe you have friends or you have your extended family. And the circles go out from there, okay? But in that most intimate circle, our desire is to be completely known and completely loved. And isn't that the desire of every single person that we know? Isn't it our greatest desire to be completely known for who we are and to be completely loved? It's what motivates us to do crazy things, right? Okay, so we've got this intimate circle, and it kind of goes out from there, okay? You're not completely naked with your friends, you know, but there's this idea of we're going to be completely known and completely loved, okay? And so that's kind of what I'm going for today when I say naked and unashamed. I'm not saying literally naked necessarily. I would encourage you to wear all your proper undergarments to MOPS, okay? Please. Otherwise, Tiffany may have to make another awkward announcement. Sorry. But the idea is have kind of, I completely see you, and I still completely accept you. When we were in Africa, my kids would, they would shower in a different building on our property because that was the only one that had a water heater. And so one night I was bringing out towels to my kids. I'm not going to tell you which kid because some of you guys know my kids, but one of them had already gotten out of the shower and he was biking. Biking naked around the compound. And yeah, that was unforgettable, and it is now part of family lore. But my point is, our kids are born with, they're born naked, and they're born, we love them anyway. They're born with with totally being themselves, and then they kind of learn to cover up, right? There are some ways they need to learn to cover up. There are other ways that they just learn. Not acceptable, right? Don't bike around the compound naked. I think that's our desire for our friendships, is a little more naked and a little more unashamed. I loved a meme that I read yesterday about friendship. It said that we need to stay friends because otherwise you know too much about me to let you live. So first that's going to start, today we're going to talk about this in two ways. We're going to talk about looking for a safe place and being a safe place. Okay? And I'm not doing great at being my own slides, but I'm going to start off with just a quote from Brené Brown, if you've heard of her work. She says, "A deep sense of love and belonging is an irreducible need of all people. We are biologically, cognitively, physically, and spiritually wired to love, to be loved, and to belong. When those needs aren't met, we don't function as we were meant to. We break, we fall apart, we numb, we ache, we hurt others, and we get sick." And I'm just thinking, you know what, if my kids were this way, I would never deny them that, right? But sometimes we deny ourselves that key need of friendship. And I know that as a mom, sometimes you guys are like, well, that's really easy for her to say. She got a shower this morning, and she's not leaking breast milk all over the place, right? I know that sometimes, like, just getting out of the house is a miracle in itself. And I know that sometimes it's like, friends, where does that fall on my priority list? Right now I'm just trying to make sure that the laundry load doesn't outgrow my house, right? I understand that it's hard to make time, but I do find that I make time for the things that are important to me. And I guess I'm saying if you're finding yourself in this sick and broken place, I want to challenge you to see if you can find that time. She continues, "Vulnerability is the birthplace of love, belonging, joy, courage, empathy, and creativity. It's the source of hope, empathy, accountability, and authenticity. If we want greater clarity in our purpose or deeper and more meaningful spiritual lives, vulnerability is the path. The difficult thing is that vulnerability is the first thing I look for in you, and it's the last thing I'm willing to show you. Isn't that true, right? In you, it's courage and daring, but in me, it's weakness, right?
I totally feel that.
So, sorry, keeping up with my notes here. So, not unlike Adam and Eve in the garden, I think we hide in our shame. We hide in the things that aren't acceptable about us. I know that some of you are wondering about getting vulnerable with people, and you're thinking, what if I share this thing that I'm going through or this thing that I went through and somebody doesn't understand? What if I share what's sacred and this person has no idea what's valuable to me? Or what if they don't even ask? Have you asked yourself those questions? Because I know I have. I can get a little bit scroogey with some of the things that are precious to me because I get skittish about sharing them with anybody. So I want to give you a few practical tips on getting vulnerable when you're afraid, okay? First of all, know that just because someone doesn't completely understand doesn't mean they can't relate. If that person's not a mom with young kids, maybe they're a person who hasn't had kids yet. Or, maybe it just you're really afraid that they've never gone through what you're going through. You know, this person, how could they understand my abuse? They don't have any abuse. They have this beautiful life that smells like cherries, you know? I don't think that means that they can't relate. I think you guys can relate even just compassionately to somebody who has gone through some really horrible things that you've never gone through. And here's the beauty of it. There's healing in the telling. And there's healing in the hearing. And some of the best listeners are the ones who hear our story, and they actually help us understand ourselves better. Right? I love listeners like that, where you're like, you're so right. That's exactly what I'm feeling. You know, where they put things into words that I couldn't even put into words. Okay, so here's another thing I want to challenge you to do. I want you to find one person you can trust and ask specifically if they'll sit down with you and listen and ask good questions. When my husband and I were going to Uganda, we had the fun task of telling our parents. And my youngest was 2, so you can imagine that was a little intimidating. You're taking the grandkids where? Seriously? The iPhones whipped out like pistols, and they were thumbing through all the headlines like, what's happening there? But when we told my father-in-law, my husband is extremely close to his dad, and he's been a huge influence in his life. And my mother-in-law doesn't know this yet. But he was, I think, concerned that what if my dad isn't on board with this? And so he did something that's going to sound a little crazy. He decided to ask his dad for what he wanted. He said, listen, Dad, I'm about to share some stuff with you that I'm really excited about, and it's a big dream of mine. And my ideal would be that you're really excited with me and that you dream with me. And I'm not going to pigeonhole you. If you don't want to do that with me, that's fine. But this is what I'd like. And so then he told him we were going to Africa, and my father-in-law totally stepped up. And he was one of our biggest cheerleaders. And if you know my father-in-law, he's not the cheerleading type. In another time, there was, when we were in Uganda, I just had a pretty traumatic experience. I was in a car accident where there was a fatality, and the memories are still extremely vivid for me. And when we were coming back, we had to come back to America right after that, and when we were coming back, my husband said, this is what I want you to do. I want you to find one friend, and I want you to say, I just want to ask you for 1 hour of your time. I want you to pepper me with questions, and then I just need somebody to listen to me. I need them to just hear my heart. And the fact that he encouraged me to do that meant that I was able to come out of one of a broken place that I'm not sure I would have ever come out of otherwise. Does that make sense? I think sometimes we want vulnerability, but then we're kind of afraid of how people will react. But we're not afraid to. But we're kind of afraid to tell them our expectations that we actually want them to receive us. Right? We actually want them to just listen. And I think it's okay to ask for what we want. Eliminate the mind game. Eliminate the friendship ESP, right? I almost said friendship ESPN. Totally. also, if you've been burned a bit by people not asking about you or not listening misunderstanding or giving you that blank stare or that pat answer, don't give up altogether. We have all had bad days and been bad listeners, right? Raise your hand if you've been a bad listener to somebody before. I probably was this morning. You know? Okay? Sometimes people are just having an off day. It's not that they don't care about you. Vulnerability takes bravery and courage takes practice. Keep putting yourself out there. Okay? Turn to your neighbor and say, keep putting yourself out there. Sorry, I have this inner elementary school teacher that just is really strong right now. Okay? So lastly, numbing our negative emotions doesn't happen without numbing our positive ones. Brené Brown, the same researcher I just mentioned, she said that in the research that she's done, she found out you cannot selectively numb. The more that we don't deal with our hurt, the more it affects your happiness right now and your contentment and your relationships. And that actually makes sense to me because when you're holding back that pain that you've got, the pain that's like right here that you're kind of trying to just look around, right? The more that you hold back, you're holding back yourself. You can't just, excuse me, I'll just hold back my pain. I'll feel everything else, right? No, you actually hold back your whole self and you start to grow in your distance from other people. Are you guys tracking with me? Is this making sense? Okay, cool. So just remember, the person who needs perfect friends will likely find themselves alone. Sorry. We're in a day where on Amazon you can order everything in every different color and different size that you want. It doesn't work that way with people. You hand order, you selectively order your friends, you have no delivery. Sharing our story is often a significant first step to healing. And the secret that you feel like you could never tell anybody might be the key lying between your slavery and your freedom. So remember, there's healing in the hearing and there's healing in the telling. That abuse and that addiction, that loathing, anger, or that intense pain, it does not have to determine your future. So, sorry, we're getting really serious. So I'm going to try to liven it up a little bit. Here's some practical ways to take off your concealer. First of all, don't wear makeup to go see your friends. And I know I've worn makeup to see some of you, so I'm probably going to keep doing it, but not every time. Angel and I had lunch yesterday. No makeup, right, Angel? But I did clean my bathroom because where's Tiffany Bassnett? She has 3 boys. We always clean our bathrooms before friends. Okay. If somebody taps by unexpectedly, don't apologize for your mess. In conversation, challenge yourself to vulnerability one step beyond what you're comfortable with, right? Just one. Baby steps, okay? You don't have to, like, you know, share your whole life story. Just one. One step beyond what you're comfortable with. Do something silly and slightly undignified in front of your friends you normally try to impress. Not that any of you would ever try to impress friends, but if you did. Wait to dye your gray hairs for 1 more week. Yes, says Cheryl, yes. Swim with your kids, even if you don't look like what you look like in a swimsuit. Okay, mom bellies, put them in a swimsuit. Go swim with your friends and your kids. Go to coffee in your workout clothes. Just put on a little deodorant. You're good. And when you have, you guys are like, how does she have time to work out? I know, it will come. When you have company, serve a simple dinner with your everyday tableware. Make the hospitality about connecting rather than dazzling. Isn't that true, though? When we have people over, it's like, we think it's like, the idea is like to impress people rather than to be friends. Sorry, I had to say that. Okay. So turn to somebody else that you haven't talked to at your table and say, I'm giving you permission to not have your act together around me. Okay. I knew you guys would like that one. That's good. All right. Okay, so now we're going to talk just a little bit about being a safe place. Okay? I'm going to talk to you about being a person of refuge. You guys have heard of cities of refuge around the U.S., right? What are cities of refuge for? safety for refugees, people who are not part of Americans, right? I'm talking about people who can be a safe place. And here's the deal. The honest truth is, we probably all think we're safe places. Okay? The reality is, if you're not a safe place, you probably don't know it. Sorry. But, so I'm just going to give us a little heart check here so we can continue evaluating just one way. Just see if you can find one way you can be more of a safe place today. Okay? A person of refuge is a shame lifter. Okay, now before I get too far here, I'm going to differentiate between shame and guilt. Okay? Shame is when the person doesn't just hear, I did bad, they hear, I am bad. Okay? Shame is like something welded onto you, not something outside of you. Okay? Shame, just statistically, it's positively correlated with addiction, depression, aggression, violence, eating disorders, and suicide. I know, if you're wondering how I did eating disorder with all that I have to offer here, it was a thing. But if people have guilt, all those things, aggression, eating disorders, suicide, addiction, they start going like this. Okay? It's conversely. If you have guilt, those go down. If you have shame, they go up. Isn't that interesting? Because guilt says, I did something bad. And we should all feel guilt at certain times, right? We should feel guilt when we do bad. Nod your head. Yes. Okay? And you get the idea that behavior is unacceptable. But with shame, you get the idea you are unacceptable. And I could go a long way about how that's toxic in our parenting, right? And that's not just us, that's me. But I think we can have toxic friendships too. When I think we communicate to people that unless you're this, you are unacceptable to me. And I think that's a tragedy. I really do. Because you know what it means? It means we're disconnected. Guilt, we can stay connected, right? Shame shows that we're unworthy of connection. Okay, and here is, and you know what? Whereas guilt manages behavior through love. I love you enough to tell you the truth that you have broccoli in your teeth, right? Shame manages through fear, okay? Shame's weapon is fear. That's vulnerable. Because, what a crock. Fear, can I say that in mom's? Sorry, I shouldn't. But fear is how you're managed with shame. And I think the fear of disconnection can make us really dangerous. So in our relationships as a shame lifter, our key message is, I accept you. And our humility is directly proportional to our level of relational safety. Why is that? Because if you're arrogant or if you think you're superior to somebody, do you think you're a safe place? No, right? So the more that we realize our own hang-ups, our own weaknesses, and to use a church term, our own sin, the more that we become safe places for other people, right? Because we understand, oh, wow, I really don't have my act together. Okay? So that's kind of where I'm going with this whole shame thing and being a shame lifter as a safe person. So here's the deal. Long before people are hurting, they know whether we're safe. Even those of you who aren't going through something funky right now, I bet you can look around and you know which person you'd go to if you were hurting, right? Because we're kind of always looking out for which people are okay. People who are hurt, they kind of have this spidey sense about whether or not people are safe. Have you noticed that? If you're an abuse victim or if you're going through a really hard time in your marriage, you have this spidey sense. You're listening to everybody else talk about their good marriages or whatever. So what I'm talking about here is that, let me give you an example. Let's say we have a woman who is, she's dealing with some homosexual urges, and she hears one of us talking about how we can't believe that somebody had a drink last night, an alcoholic drink. Do you think that she is going to trust that person with the things that she's walking through? No stinking way. no stinking way. Why would I disclose to you if you're talking about somebody having an alcoholic beverage, right? So I guess I'm just saying people know whether we're safe way before we're trying to prove ourselves as safe. So here's some ideas to be a little bit safer. First of all, create white space in your calendar, which you guys are all like, what's white space? I'm breastfeeding at 3:00 in the morning. Maybe I can meet with friends then. But here's the deal. Relationships take a lot of time. And if people know that you're busy all the time, it's harder to call, right? So if you're deciding between that kind of, should I volunteer for that thing? I'm not sure I have relationships. I'm not sure I have time. Maybe we could not do a few activities that are supposed to bring us relationships so we can leave room for the relationships we actually have, right? Okay, so number two, ixnay on the defensiveness. So this is where I'm going with this. Being emotionally safe says that I can stay open to what you have to say, even though I would rather be having a mole removed with like Celine Dion on the overhead speakers. Okay, sorry if you like Celine Dion. This doesn't mean that you have to agree with people, because true care looks like telling the truth, and it means boundaries. But it does mean that we can take ownership for what is ours, okay? It means that if people are saying something that makes us feel defensive, it's okay to take ownership for 100% of even that 1% that's true, right? And it means hearing what somebody is saying rather than getting lost in the mental static of how they're saying it. Because I don't know about you, but when I'm in the stress version of myself, I don't say things the right way. I kind of have this silver foot that I was born with in my mouth. And so if you've ever been like, oh my gosh, did she just say that out loud? I probably did. but the idea is that sometimes people in the stress version of themselves aren't going to be the most put together version of themselves. Sometimes we have to look past what they're saying, or how they're saying things, to what they're saying. Does that make sense? Okay, next, be just a little bit intrusive. I've given you, on the handout today, are a bunch of questions, and I've got even more on the website address on the back. When people are walking through some of the worst stuff ever, I don't think they're always going to know what to tell me or what to say. And so I don't mind gently asking questions that might allow somebody the opportunity to talk. More often than not, I find that people are waiting for somebody to just ask. You know, and maybe the questions that I ask weren't even like the things they were thinking in their heads. Again, to be that great listener who helps them understand even more about themselves than they knew what was going on. Repeat back. That's a basic reflective listening technique. You know, where you say, okay, I think this is what I hear you saying. Are you hearing this? It's okay. Makes them feel heard. You're not being some kind of weird parrot. You're just saying, I think I get it. If I don't get it, can you tell me? Okay, and then while sympathy is key, adding to drama is not. If you imagine taking your child to the doctor for a shot, by the way, I'm not getting into the immunization controversy, this is an illustration, okay? But I know, mom's shaming, it's real. but say you're taking your kid to the doctor to get a shot, and you have two options. You could say, oh, I'm so sorry, I know this hurts. Or you could go, I know it hurts, you know? One of them is going to calm him down. The other one is going to stir it up. My husband said to me one time when I was helping a woman with her marriage, he said, just remember, at the end of the day, she still has to go home and be married. So if I sympathize with her so much that she just gets angrier and angrier at her husband, and I just add to the drama, am I really being a good friend? You know, no. So try not to add to the drama in sympathy, but do add sympathy. Does that make sense, the difference? Okay. So next one, 70% of conversations nonverbal. So what I get from that is to watch physical signs of what's precious to them. If tears come to somebody's eyes, I'm looking at what phrase they're saying at that moment, okay? Because that's a clue. It's like a dashboard light, okay? It's like a check engine light. Something is going on underneath this hood, okay? So, I used to have a friend, one time I was talking to her, and she suddenly leaned across the table and she pointed her finger like this, and I thought, oh, that really means a ton to her. You know what I mean? I listen for the phrases that they repeat. If you're saying it over and over again, it's something that matters to you. My sister-in-law always says, family shows up. She does. And I know that to her, what family means is that family shows up, and I try to love her in that way, by showing up. So pay attention to the nonverbals. Also know that anger is a secondary emotion. We talked a little bit about defensiveness. Don't be completely put off if somebody's angry. We say it's a secondary emotion because anger comes after another emotion, okay? Usually beneath anger is hurt, embarrassment, rejection, fear. So look beneath. If somebody is talking to you about something and you're like, man, they're so angry, that's so, like, I don't know, people like me, people pleasers, we get a little nervous when people are angry. But it's just a strong activating emotion. We just got to look underneath for what's going on. Does that make sense? Okay. Also, avoid one-upmanship. Like, if you're going to tell a story of your own, just make sure it's not communicating, oh, I went through that too, but mine was so much worse. Because that doesn't really make somebody feel safe. Instead, try whatever stories you're telling about yourself, which is totally fine. Just make sure they're communicating, wow, I went through that too, and it was really hard. Or I understand part of what you're saying. And finally, when you can, help people find solutions themselves. My husband, who does a lot of leg counseling, tells me that it's really easy to dole out advice. Advice is 100% more effective when people come to that conclusion on their own, because they have ownership. It's not just somebody said, you should try this. Instead, ask good questions. Help them find a solution that's working for their life rather than just the thing that you want to dole out, like candy at a parade. Okay? Yeah, I just danced on stage, trying for that whole naked and unashamed thing. Okay. all right. So let's see here. How am I doing on time? Not great. Okay. So giving Pat answers the boot. Okay. When I had that really terrible accident in Uganda, I wrote a blog post on it. And someone put a comment with a Bible verse, Romans 8:28. People who go to church probably know what that verse is. It's about God's plans all working together for the good of people who love him. It's a very great verse. It's wonderful. But what it felt like was somebody just running by and slapping a Band-Aid on me to this, like, massive gaping wound, okay? When we give people pat answers, these little answers, it's kind of like this all-purpose Lego that we're just trying to fit on to everything. And what people get is the idea that you're a problem to be solved. You know, that I didn't really hear your heart and what you really needed, but I'd really like to fix it. Okay? So what not to do is, I would say, don't be hyper-spiritual. These are the actual words of a pastor that I read in a book. It said, praise the Lord, your baby has passed away. Her pain is now gone, and she's with Jesus. Please don't ever say that to anybody. Please. Okay? And I know Christians are known for this. And if you've been hurt by Christians who've done this to you, I want to offer a little bit of an apology if you would receive it from me. Because I know I've been one of those people at times. But I think sometimes we shouldn't try to explain what God's doing behind the scenes. And I think if we answer the surface questions without understanding their source, I think we get the answer wrong. Burden-bearing for people is messy, and it's self-sacrificial, and it's involved, and it takes a really long time, and it's very rarely formulaic. So I want you to imagine a painter coming up to your house, and he's got his truck outside, and you've told him you want to paint the outside of your house. And he goes, so what were you thinking? You're like, well, we're going with this one shade of blue. He goes, oh, okay, be right back. And he starts running towards his truck. You go, wait, where are you going? He goes, I have blue in my truck. And you're like, you have blue in your truck? He's like, yeah, I got blue. And you're thinking, wait a second, we haven't talked about eggshell or satin. We haven't talked about, I mean, there's like 40 million shades of blue, and you've got one in your truck, you know? But I think that's sometimes what we try to do with answers, right? We try to give the all-purpose shade of blue, right? Don't worry, I've got that one in my truck, right? So let's not apply an all-purpose Lego, okay? Let's try to listen to people long enough to hear what their heart questions are really asking. Sometimes I think a person of refuge is the unhero. I think she's the person who embraces the humility of just saying, I don't know what to say. So, all right, real quick, we're going to talk about gossip because we're ladies. That's all I really need to say about that. here's the rule that I use for myself. I got it from P. pacemakers, if you've heard of that. But if the person is not part of the solution, it's gossip. Okay, if they're not part of the solution of the process of your problem, gossip. Okay? So ask questions of yourself. Am I loving this person well? Why does it feel good to tell this story right now? am I really loving this person like I want to be loved? Because I bet if I had a show of hands here, I think we've all been victims of gossip, right? Kind of stinks in a really bad way. So this is the rule that I would use. This is, I keep telling my kids what the 429 rule is. They haven't got it yet. This comes from the verse Ephesians 429 in the Bible. And it's this. First of all, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths. When I think of corrupting talk, I think of acid and how it kind of slowly corrodes. Okay? So if these words splattered on someone, would they kind of corrode? Would they break down that person? Number two, only what's good for building up. That's the rule. Only what's good for building up comes out of your mouth as fits the occasion and that it can give grace to those who hear. So is it the right time? Fits the occasion? Is this your right when? And also, does it really give grace? Does it show, that word grace is kind of a churchy word, but what I mean by it is undeserved kindness. Does it offer undeserved kindness to people? So I hope that makes sense with gossip. I think that would throw out a lot of our corrupting talk. And, I mean, you might ask me about venting. Do I think that venting is okay? Well, if it builds up and doesn't tear down, if it's the right when, and if it gives grace. But sometimes I think our venting is just kind of an excuse to explode all over somebody. But anyway. So the last thing is just this. I'm getting all this because Jesus is our model for friendship. And this is why I say that. There's this verse in the Bible that I love. It says, accept one another just as Christ accepted you. And if you don't know much about the Bible or what Christ did, essentially it says that Jesus loved us even when we weren't acceptable. And he went the distance when he was angry with us to bring us close. So I find that this is a really tall order for me to even accept my husband as Christ accepted me. Because to accept my husband when he doesn't deserve it, I mean, he's a cool guy, but it also just says, the Bible says that God shows his love for us in that while we were sinners, while we were enemies, he did what was necessary to bring us close. He died. So like God does for us, we're creating a culture where we're accepted so that we can pursue what's good instead of performing so we can be accepted. Do you see the difference? One starts from a place of acceptance. One is constantly trying to get acceptance, constantly grabbing. Does that make sense to you? Okay, so honest relationships are relaying nothing short of what God says to us, which is come exactly like you are. And I'll give you rest when you are limping and you're exhausted. And you're going to be enveloped, maybe even just beckoned, by kindness that you don't deserve. All you're carrying, no matter what it looks like, or what it's been drugged through, or where it's at this very second, can be exchanged for beauty. We're all equal in our need for Jesus. So that's where real friendship comes from. And I hope we can all have a little bit less mascara as a result of this. So thanks for listening.